Coming from the Lower Haight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. Well, yes, we are back again with show number 14 here in the Lower Haight. I'm kind of missing the Tenderloin, actually.
Really?
I don't know, but then again, I didn't have to live there and you did. So, I could be a slummer and go down and enjoy the Tenderloin
for
a little while. We could head down there just for the heck of it, maybe eventually finally do our person in the street interview in the our much promised person in the street interview.
We're just building the anticipation
in the Tenderloin. I bet people have some important thoughts there, and we are here today with our very special guest, Will Franken. Now, this guy, he's never been on Saturday Night Live. It's not Will Ferrell. It's not Al Franken. It's not any of those lame motherfuckers from Saturday Night Live. It's our San Francisco's own Will Franken.
Woo.
And he is the coolest comedian in all of San Francisco, developing a global local reputation. Or, I don't know, maybe somebody in, like, South Korea has heard of.
There's a fan club.
Anyway, I need to take a moment to tell you all about some stuff I've got happening. I've got my book, Counterculture Through the Ages, From Abraham to Acid House, co-authored with Dan Joy, and you can find that under my real name, Ken Goffman, and it will be in bookstores everywhere on September 19th. It's published by Villard, and you can go to counterculturethroughtheages.com. Yes, all those letters. And you have to spell it correctly or you won't get there. And I also have an online course coming up. I'm teaching an online course called Question Authority, Challenge Authority for the Maybe Logic Institute. It's a learning institution associated with the great writer Robert Anton Wilson. And go to maybelogic.org and check it out.
Who the hell made you the authority on questioning authority, anyway?
Yeah, question authority says who.
I question that, are you?
That's been my slogan for a long time, and I am no authority, but together we will figure something out.
Or, you're an irreverent.
Maybe not. Anyway, we are very happy to have everybody back. Our gang of three is here, and Diana Brown.
Hello. Yeah,
and Jeff Deal is back.
I'm back.
As if he ever went.
Bitchin', biting, better than ever.
And you're welcome back, Jeff.
Back from my bedroom, yeah, thanks.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this.
Step right up.
So Katrina is obviously still dominating the news, as it probably should. Katrina and its man-made counterpart tragedy. I've been reading some interesting stuff lately, and there is on the internet and in the underground press, I think there's starting to evolve a bit of a different picture than what's being shown on TV, because now especially it's just turned into sort of a
love fest.
Yeah, a puff. Look how great we are. We're all these heroes with the violins.
Hands across America.
Hugging small babies.
To the rescue. A week late, but
here comes the late Calvary, as it were.
But there are some stories emerging, and one of them was the one that we posted the other day to the blog. But it involved, you know, stories of people, groups of people who were trapped, supposedly victims, self-organizing and innovating and doing whatever they could and being successful to some degree, at surviving and trying to find a way out. And the authorities, far from being heroes in these scenarios, were the biggest obstacles to these people succeeding, stopping them from going down certain roads, not allowing them out of the Superdome, for instance, and other
right. That story is a microcosm of the entire story. The Red Cross was prevented from getting in. I mean, even the Red Cross, a big organization, is a non-government organization. You know, every step of the way.
And there were church groups from all over trying to get in and being turned away. You know, but also the people who were trapped. These are the victims, the people that supposedly needed the help, and that the authorities, the people with the guns, are supposed to want to help and are supposed to be prepared to help these people, actually were probably caused the deaths of many people simply by being authorities. Doing what authorities do with their guns and with their power.
Absolutely. I mean, there were opportunities for people to get away. There were opportunities for buses to come in. There were opportunities for people to get food. And then, I mean, finally, when everybody finally started to wake up about 3 or 4 days into it, through the mass media, there was like 2 ideas that went out. One was, we got to get help to these people. And the other was, we've got to reestablish order.
Oh, yeah.
And that got a lot of emphasis. And what they did was what governments do, reestablish order first and then get help to people.
Right.
You know,
order being their main priority.
Order being that people in the middle of a flood in an abandoned place where nobody is going to return for 4 months shouldn't break into stores that are going to get insurance money for everything they have inside already and run off with an electric toaster. You know, this is, you know, people are floating by them dead. Babies aren't getting enough to eat. And everybody's screaming about some guy running around with a television set. It's just, it's too bizarre.
Well, in the Harper's article that Jeff sent to us and that he's referencing now, I loved the greatest looter, as they quoted it, was this gentleman who took a bus that was sitting around and drove 70 of his neighbors to safety in Houston. Mm-hmm. So that's a beautiful example.
Pragmatic looting.
Absolutely, pragmatic looting. It's a new phrase coined here by RU Today.
And also, I mean, the guy who we talked to on the phone, and we're going to have this interview later on in the show, but who's running the bar in New Orleans, and has basically, this bar has been repurposed as a multi-purpose node in the community.
Absolutely.
Giving out supplies. The only thing he's charging for is alcohol, but he's giving out supplies. He's doing triage. He's doing all this stuff, interfacing with the media and with the military. And he's just a bar owner in New Orleans. And so I guess the question becomes, beyond the whole who fucked up here, the question is, what fucked up here? And, you know, is this in the nature of these large systems of control? They're not really geared towards saving lives. They're geared towards having control over a certain type of control over a situation, which basically means the ability to force people to do what they want. But
and maintaining that control for themselves.
Also, I mean, red meat for any government is the idea that there's no authority here and we have to go in and reestablish our authority.
And then
not trusting people to be able to, evolve their own solutions and not working with them. But,
Yes, we must force order upon them because they're not capable of doing it for themselves.
Somebody here has to disagree with one of us. Over there, the empty chair.
Well, and watch what happens, though, because right now, if you look at New Orleans, I mean, ain't nobody there except people with guns from all different – it's become a military zone, and they already have heard plans about – for the future, for disasters in the future, they're going to the initial wave of response is going to be military.
Absolutely.
The people with the guns are expanding their power, as they always do in times of crisis and social breakdown. So don't look, maybe it's time to stop thinking of these people as benefactors and start realizing that there's a certain danger in even thinking that these people should have helped to begin with, you know?
Well, I think what will happen next time is not that people will get relief quicker because the military is there establishing order, but that we won't hear about the problem because the military is there.
Celebrity. Today on show, But person is different. Person, why are you different?
Well, it's not as if I just woke up one morning and said to myself, okay, person, today I'll be different. I think being different is just something I was born with.
Okay, today on show we also have people. People are the same, and that's different from being different? Yes, but it's not as if we just woke up one morning and said to ourselves, okay, people, today we should be the same. We think being the same is just something we were born with. Okay, it would seem from our discussion so far that being the same or being different is just something you're born with. But today on show we have expert. Expert, you disagree. You don't think being the same or being different is just something you're born with.
No, but it's not as if I just woke up one morning and said to myself, okay, expert, today I think I'll disagree with people who believe that being the same or being different is just something you're born with. And I think my belief that being the same or being different is not just something you're born with, it's just something I was born with. Okay. We'll be right back after message.
You've just heard Will Franken's routine show. Where was that recorded, Will?
That was the Starry Plow Poetry Slam.
All right,
Berkeley,
a poetry slam.
Yep. It's yeah, probably the last time I went to one of those, I think, too. I was featuring that night, and I got my rocks off, and it was like, swore off the poetry slams. I think I went to a couple more after that. And then,
is it easy to swear off poetry slams? Or oh, withdrawal
yeah.
period?
More kids
you,
should
you
swear
have
off
a very funny routine, actually, about poetry
on
slams.
On poetry slams?
Well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, Will Franken is San Francisco's coolest hot new comedian, or the hottest cool new comedian, or maybe he's just a tall guy who lived in his car until
yeah.
recently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
And he was named Best New Comedian by the San Francisco Weekly and the Best Alternative to Psychedelic Drugs by the Bay Guardian. I'm an expert on this, and we'll just have to see if I get off. You know,
you have to put me on your tongue and drink a lot of orange juice.
Really? We're going to be trying this a little bit later, actually.
When you die, will they cut you up and sell you in hits?
Oh, yeah, they're going to put me on display like that new, you seen that stuff? The Body Within?
The Universe Within.
Nice. Yes.
I haven't seen it yet, but I want to. Is it creepy?
It's kind of creepy. It just leaves you with this real nauseous feeling afterwards. But
well, especially when you find out that they don't know who those people are. And
right.
There's some
they,
question
yeah.
about
they claim that they got the correct permissions, but apparently yeah. they didn't. So the guy, yeah. the German guy, is a German, of course.
Oh, yeah, the head of it.
The Asian American community is kind of pissed off because they're like, these people are all Asian. What's
they're all short Asians,
there?
Yeah.
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 yeah. They're Chinese.
There's a whole lampshade section, too. And
it's pretty disturbing.
They claim they were born that way. They came out of the womb with a lampshade.
The Asian man yeah. with the lampshade head. I think it sounds like
stereotypes are all true.
And it takes us right back to the poetry slam, doesn't it?
So what is your favorite hallucinogen, Will?
Well, I swore off drugs, and then I started smoking pot again like last year. And just because I think you have to in San Francisco.
It was
eventually going to happen.
It's a law, yeah.
Yeah, so I started smoking grass again. But my favorite was always acid. Mm-hmm. Actually, peyote, but I only did that a couple times.
Oh, wow.
But that was
peyote.
The most poignant
intense.
Trip I ever had, yeah. I really felt the out-of-body experience.
Where were you? Were you on the desert? In the desert?
No, it was at my
you
friend.
Ever see the Beavis and Butthead do America?
Where they go out and trip in the desert? Yeah. Not too bad. Yeah, no, the peyote was good. The throwing up part I actually enjoy because it's like you tip over and it just falls out.
All
like
right.
There's no effort involved. You know, it's like this innate vomit that was inside you the whole time that just comes out.
I did ayahuasca in the Amazonian.
Did you?
Ayahuasca? What's ayahuasca?
It's nasty, but it's a similar type of hallucinogen.
It's a tryptamine, DMT based.
Oh, DMT, yeah.
And it's a purgative thing too, where like you throw up violently, and it actually wasn't easy.
Wasn't pleasant.
No, and it's a strange concoction. I mean, this guy brews up stuff, including like he puts alcohol, not
right.
but like tobacco in there, and you drink it. You know, like you're drinking tobacco.
Yeah.
And then you're in a dark room, and everybody throws up on each other, and it's but
nice.
It's a cool trip. If I hadn't been like
sounds like the Purple Onion.
Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of trip, you just returned from the New York Fringe Festival, correct?
Your
one person show. Good luck with it. So how did that go? Tell us about that.
At first, I was going to split because I don't really dig festivals and there's 50,000 shows and you can see one of them. It's like the Walmart of entertainment. You know? And we showed up, and I think ours was the only venue that wasn't a theater beforehand. It was some storeroom in the basement of a real theater. And so I went there and I was like, you know, it was hard to come from San Francisco to there where you're kind of a nobody. And I got all huffy. And this is not good. Now I'm going to talk to the head woman.
I have work this way.
Right. They had these. It was like, it was a 40-seat venue and the chairs were just really uncomfortable, excruciatingly painful chairs. So I went there and I asked the woman if I could have the at least some folding chairs brought in. You know, she said, no, it'll cost $1,600 to do it. And then my wife and I looked through the reservation books and we saw that the New York Times was coming the opening night. So I said, God damn it, I'll do it just for that. And
excellent.
I'll show them all. So the first three shows was real slim pickings. I mean, we had like 17 people, 20 people. And then after the New York Times thing came out, it was like, you know.
They were around the block.
Yeah, because even the shows that they were really panning, like they would give these horrible reviews to these shows. But just the fact that it was in the Times.
Right.
They'd sell out the next day.
Did you see any of the other shows?
I saw one. There was this real cool chick named Tara Clancy. At TaraClancy.com, I told her I was going to do what I could to promote her.
Nice.
She's this chick from Queens. Got the real heavy accent. You know, she's an authentic New Yorker. And she does this one-woman show about what it's like to grow up in Queens versus Manhattan. And what she calls, she refers to them as waspy cunts. Can I say that on this thing? I'm sure.
Absolutely. Please do.
Say it again.
Waspy cunts. And it's just the funniest thing to hear that. So I told her I was going to try to get her out to San Francisco because there's not a lot of plays out here that deal with class.
No, there isn't.
It's all sexuality or race, but nobody's talking about the class issues. So.
That'd be great.
I'm going to try to see what I can. Her play was called Channel Rat. Channel Rat. Broad Channel Queens. So
okay.
Bring yourself as a Channel Rat.
Right. Fantastic.
I wanted to see Fleet Week just because it was real big and gay. And I want to see a gay musical. It looked kind of funny.
Is it called Fleet Week?
Fleet Week.
Is that the popular Broadway play or something?
No, it was a Fringe Festival thing, but it was...
Fringy.
That should come
the
out
posters
here.
Had two sailors on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
That's a New York experience. I wanted to do that, but didn't get the chance.
How did you find New York audiences versus San Francisco audiences? Do they differ?
I used to live in New York from 98 to 2001, and I couldn't get stage time anywhere. It's like, if you're not known, you've got to bring five people, and they've got to buy two drinks, and it was all...
Bringer
shows. It's a big racket, yeah. They make you flyer and shit like that, so...
Pay to play like bands.
Right. And so, like, it was like a great... return, actually.
Nice!
Because, especially the last show, it was really cool. I had people hanging around afterwards and, you know, wanted to talk to me. I think it was like three or four people said, this is your town, you got to come back. So it was like a triumphant return. San Francisco has been so good to me, and I'm always surprised that I was able to put something together here.
Really?
Because I knew in New York they would go for, like, cutting-edge, nasty shit.
Sure.
A little bit more, but... you know, San Francisco does have the reputation for political correctness.
Yeah, when I first got here, yeah. I didn't think people... It took me about several months before I met anybody who got irony.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
You know, and it's like, so you'd say something, you know, right. Ironically about how they should, like, kill all the kids in that hospital or something.
And then that's not funny.
You don't really think that, do you?
Right.
No!
Berkeley was the one I had problems with. I played in like the show clip. That's from Berkeley. And it was like, that's... Maybe 2 or 3 weeks after that, I stopped playing in Berkeley. And like once a year, maybe I would accidentally do a show in Berkeley, but they are so far to the left or the right.
It was funny because some of your jokes, the politically incorrect stuff, it seemed like some people were laughing really loud, like almost inappropriately loud. Like they're not used to laughing at stuff like...
Right.
Stuff like that, and
they're
kind of dealing
nervous
with that while they're laughing.
Right.
They can't stop because of it, you know, and it sounds almost hysterical.
I think San Francisco, though, there's a mark. I think, first off, San Francisco's got a more city mentality. It's not like a provincial suburb Berkeley.
Right. Yeah,
Berkeley is just full of shit. There's so many. Everybody's a Mexican. They got Mexican gardeners up there in the hills, and they would never set foot in Oakland, which is where the real ghetto is. But they just, I mean, it's. My wife and I lived up there, and it was such utter horse shit. But San Francisco does have at least the city mentality, and I think there's a hunger for something that does kind of attack the politically.
Oh yeah,
I definitely think so. I think that's partially why. Obviously, you're very talented and funny, but that's partially why San Francisco's embraced you as it has.
But I thought I was hallucinating when I saw on your website that you performed at Harbin Hot Springs.
I was doing it once every other month.
Really?
For like a year.
I went up there to read from my book a couple months ago, and I thought I thought I was out of place. Did you have your chakras fluffed? Did you have tantric sex?
I thought I was going to bomb there the first night. I don't know how. I forgot how. This guy, Mur the Earth Man. Did you meet him?
No.
He used to do.
No.
He went to Hawaii to become a gigolo.
Huh.
Or is it gigolo? What's the word gigolo?
I met the guy who books there who is reasonably cool.
Steve?
Yeah.
Comedians pronounce it gigolo. Yeah.
I mean, gigolo.
I got a gigolo tonight. I can't go.
It's a gigolo who gets tickled or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought I was going to bomb because I thought they would all be like Berkeley people. And then I went up there and See, the reason I hated Berkeley was because I was winning the poetry slams every week, doing like I do a white trash, or do the show bit, which is oh, we all hate the media, and then
I went in there one day and did my Native American bit, which I think is really proud of,
and the scores just plummeted, man. It
wham! Oh, no. You took out a sacred cow.
Yeah, and I thought that's what Harvin was going to be like, and they just they were really hip with it. The only thing I couldn't do there was like I have a sexual harassment counselor bit, and I couldn't do that there because I guess the nudity in the pools, and the guy came up to me and said something like, that actually happens here, so it's very sensitive. So I said, but your guys are Watsu shit naked in the pools. It's all about fucking. That's all. I don't care what anybody says. Spiritual realignment. It's about fucking.
You know? That's what makes it a poignant piece. I would imagine it would be more meaningful.
But you could hear the pin drop, when I do it up there. But they're great people. So
we should break for a moment and listen to Will Franken. Tune. He brought some CDs with him. And what are we going to listen to again?
This is you guys said you got any CDs, and I thought I'd bring some old stuff. So this is, I think I must have been 25 when I wrote this. Are you serious? Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm the miracle man, and I can do whatever I can, but some folks think I'm unkind, 'cause I live inside my mind, but they just don't understand the workings of the miracle man. Wild and rampant through the air and over the sea. Oh, yes, my friends, that's me. But though while I'm always free, oh, no one touches me, not even me.
Like the miracle man. Sirius.
Well, we're back with Will Franken. It's fabulous to have you here. Will Franken is truly the San Francisco treat because, to quote my good friend Howard Stone, rice is not a treat. So
Stone, I love Howard Stone.
Well, let's shout out to Howard Stone. He's on his way back from...
Where's he been?
He's been on the road in Reno.
For the rest of us, tell us about Howard Stone.
Howard Stone is one of the greatest dreadlocked comics out there, but you've probably worked with him. I'd rather hear your
We did Harbin. We did
you
Harbin
did Harbin together?
Times. Yeah.
Nice.
Harbin's Howard's a very sweet guy. He sounds a lot like Harvey Fierstein.
He does.
And he just giggles and laughs, and he's a lot of fun. You know Danny Dechy?
Yes, the Danny Dechy Orchestra.
Yeah, I saw him on a commercial for the Giants.
Exactly. The man is everywhere now. He was actually came to see my play last night. I'm doing Dead Certain at the Next Stage Theater.
At the Next Stage?
Plug. Yeah, you'll have to check that out. Right, that was a shameless plug slipped right in there. But Danny Dechy is this amazing comic who takes a number... Well, he shows up, and he's got his instrument case. He's a serious musician.
Violin case, right?
Yes, it's a violin case. And he opens it up and he pulls out his beautiful Ticonderoga number 2 pencil and plays any song you want to hear on his face. And then his finale is usually playing the 1812 Overture with his fingers on his on his forehead. And he's fabulous. You can check him out at the DannyDechy.com, I think.
Is that his website?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, someone that Giants that. Commercial. I thought that was pretty cool. He's...
I have no idea what you're talking about. You're blowing my mind.
We will get Danny on the show.
I think I can understand the concept of somebody playing tunes on their face, though.
Sure you can.
And I'm sure the visuals are as fabulous in your minds as they are in reality.
Absolutely.
We first saw him at the Java Source, a little club on Clements, coffee house, really doing his one-man act. And when he was done, we all stood up and flicked our lighters because we wanted an encore from him.
It was a trip.
But you just finished a show last night, an evening with Will Franken at the Purple Onion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. They were obviously happy to have you back.
Yeah, we had a couple people walk out. That usually doesn't happen. I had a couple people walk out the moment they did. I do a commercial for a public service announcement for a group called Fathers Without Children, and it's narrated by this pitcher, and I'm talking about how I used to love to play catch with my son before he was killed by a tornado, but after joining with Fathers Without Children, they taught me that you can play catch by yourself by throwing the ball up in the air, and that taught me I never needed a kid in the first place. So. And we had two people in the back walk out, and then... it was weird. The last time I played the Purple Onion, I have this bit where I shoot up with a crucifix.
Nice.
And of all the things for people to get upset about in San Francisco, so they must have been from Marin. But they stayed for the remaining 40 minutes of the show, even though they were really offended.
Just so they could be sure they were offended.
Stayed at the end.
Maybe they thought you were wasting good dope.
Might have been, because the chick comes up to me and goes, "You suck." She's the only one saying that. Everybody else, "Oh, it was a great show." She's like, "You suck." And I said, "What is your problem?" She says, "You know what my problem is? You were mainlining Jesus." And I said, "Okay, just get the fuck out of here."
Aren't we supposed to get him in us any way we can?
I thought that would be a good thing for people who are in favor of that thing.
That's right. Yeah. Well, how'd she know the term Jesus mainlining? That's like a Lou Reed junkie term. That's what I couldn't figure out. So our theory was that she
pissed off. Was it blasphemy against mainlining or against Jesus?
Yeah, right.
Now that's a relevant question. Yeah.
Actually, a lot of smack addicts are into Jesus. So there might be a complex psychology.
Well, they end up looking like him after a while. Yeah,
if you'd shared a line of Mexican brown heroin with her, I think
that could have been it.
She would have gone away happy.
Well, we think the fact that she knew the term mainline, she must have been some recent convert.
Definitely
used to do heroin,
test.
And she got converted, and now it's all Christ now. Now she really is shooting up Christ in her, metaphorically, but that had never happened before. Christ was always the easy thing. You go to the poetry slams or anywhere, you say, "Fuck Jesus, piss on the flag, rip up the Bible," and you're a hero. You know?
Right.
You can bring that one back to Berkeley.
That's right.
There you go. That's what you were trying to return to Berkeley.
Don't you guys hate Jesus? Isn't he responsible for all your... Yeah, that's right, You write poems because Jesus was mean to me.
That's right, we must blame someone, and it's not our parents
time. Absolutely.
So I heard you had a routine on 9/11 conspiracy theory. We just did a show. I don't know. It was listed in one of the reviews of your thing. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Oh, no.
We just did a show about it, actually.
It's the George Bush, I think, invading the 18th century. It's a war about time. This protesters got these little flyers that say, "It's not my present." It's this whole theory about George Bush is in 1776, supposedly... giving aid to the Revolutionary War soldiers to help them defeat the British, even though we've already done that because it's in the history books. However, because he keeps going back in time, he keeps fucking up the history books. Now all the history books say that George Bush won the Revolutionary War, and that's not true. So the conspiracy. Well, it's weird. Like, I wrote that bit, and I really believe that. I think the war in Iraq is secondary. It's not a smokescreen. Which is it's an issue that makes people feel like they're really, they've got their own Vietnam now. But I think the big problem is that we're just pissing all over the past. My thing, if I ever had to get this, I think the present is saying fuck you to history.
So the big cover up is that people are going back there into the past and fucking things up.
Or just getting rid of history, like wiping out like all these great work. This whole notion, my wife was going to school and like people were ridiculing the dead white male authors, like just the fact that they were dead and white, that they had nothing worthwhile to say. And I think we're heading towards this, especially in Hollywood too. We're remaking movies every 10 years. It's like, yeah, nothing came before this generation. And God, what was it? This theory that I have is that there's younger people in control now of like the media that never had to work for anything.
Right.
And so you don't see a lot of movies about grand conquest and great dreams.
No hero's journey.
Yeah, like there's no Citizen Kane now.
Yes.
It's just this kind of cute notion of we saw the Bad News Bears when we were a kid. Let's remake it. You know, this is all about us and our childhood.
That's so true. Spoon feeding our childhood back to us.
It's a smug culture.
It's self-referential and media referential. And you combine like arcane references and literate references with some pop culture stuff too, and media and all that. Now, I wanted somebody that used to get a lot of credibility for supposedly having a lot of intellectual references and depth and so forth was Dennis Miller. What do you think about Dennis Miller?
Dennis Miller, you know, he had a couple lines I like. My problem is I never dug the form of stand up. Like,
right.
I'm much more into sketch. Like, I would say Monty Python.
Yeah, and,
Kids in the Hall.
What's the British guy, Eddie Izzard?
Eddie Izzard's got a lot of good stuff, yeah.
Somewhere between
stand-up and sketch, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got an extra edge, too, because he's British, though.
Yes, and we love that accent. Yeah. My friend sold him a slip.
Oh, right, because he's a tranny.
Yeah,
he was
in town.
Yeah. Can I touch you?
You can. He just did, and he's glowing as a result.
Oh, wow, what a trip. Yeah, he's a trip. He's a trip.
Have you ever seen Paul Krasner perform?
No, he was in he was at the Purple Onion.
Yeah, because he does these long kind of
things,
these routines that they come back to the beginning again. It's like the Grateful Dead. You know, it's part of his generation. You go all the way out. You forget where you were, and he manages to bring it all back around to the major theme.
Wow. Yeah, Steve Martin was always, as far as stand-up, I like a lot of the stuff he did.
He did a lot of good work. Somebody who does weird conceptual shit with very few words, of course, is Steve Wright. Oh,
yeah. Steven Wright's
good.
He's really
funny. Yeah.
Andy Kaufman before.
So are you writing any sketches? Are you working on any sketches right now? Do you work with other people or do you just...
No, it's always hard. I guess I'm like a Hitler figure or something. I don't know, man. It's
a dictator of comedy.
It's not quite the way it should be. I mean, there were a couple of times. I was in North Carolina. I don't know why I moved there. I think I moved there from New York. Just because I probably wanted to die. I'm not sure what happened, but they had one sketch troupe down there, and I joined it, and you couldn't do any solo pieces. You had to submit it to the group, and it was the first time I worked with a sketch troupe, and I took this Native American piece, and I needed a straight guy. So I said, well, I'll do this one, and the guy who played the straight guy was just horrible, just mugging and preening. Oh, man, it was horrible.
I'm going to quote Howard Stone again. He would say that would be Showboatin' Pete.
Showboatin' Pete, yeah. But, it's easier just to do it solo, actually. My wife plays bit parts sometimes, so.
That's very cool.
But it's easy, because...
So you don't see yourself as getting sucked up into Saturday Night Live or anything like that?
It's horrible. God, that's like a big in-joke. It's been an in-joke probably since 77.
It's so inside baseball. It's terrible. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, like they giggle and they, and that's the reason I don't like Jon Stewart, and I know I'm in the minority with that, but we watched him in the motel like not too long ago, my wife and I, and like, it seems like a lot of it, he shows a clip of something stupid that the president did, and it'll come back to his face just going, And then gets a thunderous ovation.
It's the arched eyebrow syndrome. The arched eyebrow thing. That goes back to David Letterman. I think David Letterman.
It is. Was
the, although I adore the David Letterman. If I could ever do anything.
I enjoy both of them, actually.
He was just so twisted, David Letterman, when I was a kid.
His early stuff, yeah.
He was. I mean, compared to now.
That thing where he used to raise his arms and then Paul would do this weird...
And he used to so subtly tear apart his guests. I'll never forget when he had Peter Best, the failed drummer for the Beatles.
Yeah, him on there. I know he had him on there. Painful. Wow.
One of the harshest moments in history.
Wow.
That was rough.
Now, see, that's a suicide situation because we always used him as a hypothetical. You know, my friends and I would say, if you were Pete Best, would you kill yourself? You would. Right. No, I'd go on living, but you really couldn't. Because you'd have to spend the rest of your life pretending like the Beatles were no big deal.
Yeah, how could you? I mean, there's no escaping that.
I would never ask for that. You know, he was probably happy when John died, too. Because I wouldn't want to be murdered by some crazy lunatic. I'm just happy to make my pies. He's a baker. Is he a baker? I heard
he outlived them all. Yes! At the age of 95, when McCartney finally drops, we'll look at Pete Best.
Well, and as younger and younger people are rewriting history, soon it'll just be Pete Best, the only real Beatle left.
The Beatle will keep you around. The problem is, like, Paul McCartney's contributing to this, too.
It's true.
I hated the anthology. I like the anthology, the movies, but I've never been a fan of outtakes. I like the way it was originally issued. I just like that sound.
You know, what I hate is now you go online and you try to pick up a free tune or something like that, and you think you're getting the original tune, and it's always something else. It's always some outtake or some crappy live version. And I want to hear it just the way I listened to it
a zillion
times when I was 19 years old.
Exactly. Absolutely, yeah.
Singing Hey Jude in the second grade.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid we're running short on time, but we're going to have Will Franken back very soon. Mm-hmm. In fact, to him, it will just seem like a couple of minutes, but to those of you listening, it might seem like a month or two. Thanks a lot, Will Ferrell, for coming around. Will Franken, whoops.
Oh, see, he said it himself, and then he did it.
Thanks a lot, Al Franken, or Tom Davis, or whatever.
Thank you, Al Sharpton.
Thanks, Al Sharpton, for being here.
This is Diana Brown with a special report. I'm on the phone with Bedwear from Johnny White's, a bar in New Orleans that has remained open throughout the Hurricane Katrina fiasco.
Absolutely.
Johnny White's Sports Bar.
Hi, Bedwear.
Yeah.
This is Diana Brown. I spoke to you earlier in the week, and we're giving you a call so we can chat with you for a few moments for the Are You Serious show. How are you?
No, I'm fine. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. So how's it going there? I know that...
we're doing fine.
Fantastic. Now, you guys have remained open throughout this, so how's the liquor supply? Are you guys ever going to run out of drinks there?
Oh, hell no.
I see you have your priorities firmly covered. So what is the favorite drink people are having right now? Something tall and deep and strong?
Everything is in flux. Sometimes we have beer that is warm, sometimes we have beer that is cold, and sometimes we have ice and no beer.
I think the warm beer without ice is preferable to the ice without beer. So,
if we don't have beer, then we go to cocktails.
I like that you're adaptable. Now,
how about food?
That's one of the primary laws of evolution. You adapt or you die, right?
This is true.
How are you guys doing for food?
I think the dinosaurs have figured this one out by now.
So now, when I spoke to you on the phone, you said folks were bringing in food and sharing food and water, and you guys have really become quite a community center.
That's correct.
Well, you know, it's really reassuring to hear that, because all we keep hearing is stories of chaos, and you guys
are... Government destruction.
I know, and you guys are obviously a model of cooperation there.
Well, we're a bunch of individuals, otherwise we wouldn't have ended up living in the French Quarter. And what we have here now, I mean, it's been interesting to watch this over the last 2 weeks, in that this my neighborhood bar has turned into a community center, and then into a triage center, and then into a distribution center, and, we're the only ones around in the quarter, and we're serving three districts, basically.
Thank you. I'm sorry I interrupted you there. Could I ask, how are you guys dealing with the sanitation and toilet situation right now?
Best we can.
Well said, sir, with grace and dignity.
You adapt, so I brushed my teeth with bottled water today.
All right.
You know, well, I mean, you can't use the tap water is good for the little water that we have. I mean, they're telling us not to even take a shower in it.
Really? Okay.
But it is good enough to flush the toilet, and that is a major step forward, I should tell you.
Amen, brother, to that.
Are they trying to get you to leave? Are the feds coming around? I guess.
Well, there are so many. You know, there are so many different agencies involved, and nobody knows. It's chaos. I mean, nobody knows what's going on, and different people, different agencies get different orders, and some come from the mayor, some come from the governor, and some come from the federals, and some come from the military. And the only one that's been truly consistent on the ground is the military.
Are you guys...
The 82nd Airborne.
Are you serving the a lot of military folks?
Oh, absolutely. Serving everybody.
But what's the scene like in the bar right now? I mean, what's the mix of customers like?
Well, the Saints game just finished. You know, the American football stuff. So we've got a good crowd here. We got a nice mix of... about one-third media and two-thirds local, which is about tolerable.
So
but,
you guys...
no, we're doing fine. We have supplies. The Army is helping us out. We have the MREs. We have water. We have clothing and blankets that we hand out. You know, and pretty much the owner, and we just had a barbecue on the street, so we had burgers for everybody. And the only thing we're selling is booze.
I wish I was
everything
there.
Else,
I wish I was there.
Everything else we give away.
You know, wow. When I spoke to you earlier in the week, you had, I said, you know, we're certainly all thinking about you, and you said something beautiful, and I'd like you to repeat it for our listeners about worry versus hopeful.
Oh, yeah.
If you just
well, it's very simple because this is it's time to get proactive instead of reactive. Don't worry about us. Hope for us.
That's beautiful. Bedward, we're going to check back in with you as the time goes on. I'm going to thank you so much for your time. I know you have to get home and take care of your dogs, as
yes.
you said. So know we're thinking of you, and we so appreciate your time.
We appreciate your care. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bedward.
Bye-bye.
Many thanks go out once again to our guests. We want to thank Will Franken for coming into the studio here in the Lower Haight District of San Francisco and talking to us. And a special thanks to Bedwer at Johnny White's Bar in New Orleans. Our gang of three was Are You Serious, Diana Brown, and me, Jeff Deal. Next week, Tim Cavanaugh from Reason Magazine will be joining us once again. The Are You Serious show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Subscribe to all the shows at mondoglobo.net. Thanks for listening. And don't be afraid of the dark.
Everybody in a situation like Hurricane Katrina, everybody just wants to blame somebody instead of fix the problem. And the problem is, we need somebody to blame. And we want to blame the people who aren't fixing the problem. And this is kind of circular thing that goes somewhere.